And now it's time for Another World is Possible. That was the refrain from The Guillotine, performed by The Coup. It was suggested as theme music for this part of The Old Mole, called Another World is Possible, by Candy Luisa Herrera. We'll hear from Candy about her musical choice in just a bit. What do we mean when we say another world is possible? Drawing on utopian and dystopian literature and so much more, this regular feature on the Old Mole Variety Hour will explore the many dimensions of that sonorous phrase. To begin, here's part of a very funny story by Louisa May Alcott about a mid-19th century effort to set up a utopian community. The story is called Transcendental Wild Oats.
"There is our new abode," announced the enthusiast, smiling with a satisfaction quite undamped by the drops dripping from his hat brim, as they turned at length into a cart path that wound along a steep hillside into a barren-looking valley. "A little difficult of access," observed his practical wife as she endeavored to keep her various household goods from going overboard with every lurch of the laden ark. "Like all good things, but those who earnestly desire and patiently seek will soon find us," placidly responded the philosopher from the mud, through which he was now endeavoring to pilot the much-enduring horse. "Truth lies at the bottom of a well, Sister Hope," said Brother Timon, pausing to detach his small comrade from a gate, whereon she was perched for a clearer gaze into futurity. "That's the reason we so seldom get at it, I suppose," replied Mrs. Hope, making a vain clutch at the mirror, which a sudden jolt sent flying out of her hands. "We want no false reflections here," said Timon, with a grim smile, as he crunched the fragments underfoot in his onward march.
We'll return to the story in a moment, as we begin to see the gendered nature of this quest for an alternative way of living. Most of what you hear on the Old Mole Variety Hour deals in one way or another with Another World is Possible. In this regular feature, we'll simply try to do so in a direct and organized manner. In addition to literary utopias and dystopias, we'll examine questions like whether genuine democracy is really possible, and the challenges to that possibility in the fields of sociology, psychology, and liberal political philosophy. I'll give you a clue now. Early developments in each of those fields are specifically designed to show the impossibility of people collectively managing their own society. We'll evaluate their reasoning and conclusions. For another example of a question we'll address, the resistance within much of Marxism to utopian thinking, and the minority traditions within Marxism that embrace it. Or a completely different area of interest, why dystopias in particular seem to appeal to adolescents. We'll look at some of the themes that pervade utopian and dystopian literature, like the supposed choice between security and individual freedom, or the ambiguous possibilities of sexuality. And we'll come back often to the complex relationship between those supposedly opposite but really closely linked categories of utopia and dystopia. One of my own formative experiences, something I can still conjure up in memory, was riding home from high school on a public bus and trading Aldous Huxley's Ape and Essence for Rousseau's Social Contract. Trading, in other words, a dystopia, a book meant to warn us of the dangers ahead if we didn't act, for a book that opened up for me the possibilities of a society very much better than what exists. Over time, I hope to persuade you, the listeners, not only that another world is possible, which you may already to some extent believe, but that deep down, it really is possible. I come out of the movement of the extended 1960s, anti-war, civil rights, feminist, that even back then didn't seem to me as if most of my sister and brother participants thought and acted as if they believed at the core of their being that things could be fundamentally different. We are surrounded now by a culture that encourages a sense of determinism and inevitability, that the social and economic arrangements that exist are the only ones that could exist, that all history has led to where we are now and could have led nowhere else. Our work, our TV watching, internet browsing, sports spectatorship are structured in ways that make it increasingly difficult to imagine significant alternatives. Really, to make a difference, we have to change that sense of possibility. So, will the intrepid pilgrims in Louisa May Alcott's story succeed in establishing a utopia? Or is that too much to expect for mid-19th century? They settled in, and Alcott tells us, I believe, tongue in cheek, having cast the forms and vanities of a depraved world behind them, the elders welcomed hardship with the enthusiasm of new pioneers, and the children heartily enjoyed this foretaste of what they believed was to be sort of a perpetual picnic. Other people arrive, and the leadership lays down the rules about permitted clothing, permitted kitchenware, permitted foods, none of which take into account the interests of the woman who will actually be responsible for clothing and feeding everyone and cleaning up after them. And then we get another statement of idealistic principles.
Each member is to perform the work for which experience, strength, and taste best fit him, continued Dictator Lyon. Thus, drudgery and disorder will be avoided and harmony prevail. We shall rise at dawn, begin the day by bathing, followed by music, and then a chaste repast of fruit and bread. Each one finds congenial occupation till the meridian meal, when some deep, searching conversation gives rest to the body and development to the mind. Healthful labor again engages us till the last meal, when we assemble in social communion, prolonged till sunset, when we retire to sweet repose, ready for the next day's activity. What part of the work do you incline to yourself? Asked Sister Hope, with a humorous glimmer in her keen eyes.
Note that humorous glimmer. The furniture arrives. Sister Hope settles into the kitchen. There are more rules in the interests of pure living that don't take into account the needs of women's work. As Alcott remarks, only a brave woman's taste, time, and temper were sacrificed on that domestic altar. They farmed. They make practical compromises with their idealistic principles. Inexperienced farmers, they also make mistakes. They work out education for the children, but Alcott oddly doesn't use the opportunity either to promote or spoof particular educational principles. Their motives turn out to vary a bit based on who had invested more resources. And then there was the issue of the market.
Money was abjured as the root of all evil. The produce of the land was to supply most of their wants or be exchanged for the few things they could not grow. This idea had its inconveniences, but self-denial was the fashion, and it was surprising how many things one can do without. When they desired to travel, they walked, if possible, begged the loan of a vehicle, or boldly entered car or coach, and, stating their principles to the officials, took the consequences. Usually, their dress, their earnest frankness, and gentle resolution won them a passage. but now and then they met with hard usage and had the satisfaction of suffering for their principles.
The men clearly are more interested in traveling to promote their vision. As a result, the crops fail. Sister Hope and the children are left to harvest what they can. Her husband is ready to give up everything.
He had tried, but it was a failure. The world was not ready for a utopia yet, and those who attempted to found it only got laughed at for their pains. In other days, men could sell all and give to the poor, lead lives devoted to holiness and high thought, and after the persecution was over, find themselves honored as saints or martyrs. But in modern times, these things are out of fashion. To live for one's principles at all costs is a dangerous speculation, and the failure of an ideal, no matter how humane and noble, is harder for the world to forgive and forget than bank robbery or the grand swindles of corrupt politicians.
But his wife, Sister Hope, with her practical sense, finds them shelter and work back in the mainstream society. Thus, the struggle between idealism and practicality, vision and skepticism, in this case, a gendered struggle, that underlies so much of the response to utopia.
Good morning, Candy.
Good morning.
It's wonderful to have you on the Old Mole Variety Hour. This is Candy Luisa Herrera. Candy is an organizer for the Washington Education Association. You took on kind of a tough challenge. I already mentioned on the program that you were the music muse for our new segment, Another World is Possible. And I asked you to come up with music that would both reflect utopian and dystopian themes. What was your thinking?
Well, my thinking was primarily to maybe pick some music from the last 20 years or so.
Well, you picked out a few things, and from them, I selected By the Coup by Boots Riley's group, The Guillotine. Say something more specific about that. How does it fit our kind of motif?
Sure. Well, Boots Riley and then all the folks who are part of the coup, they're Marxists. They're pretty unapologetic about it. So, Boots Riley, who was recently on Democracy Now! Talking about his wonderful labor film, Sorry to Bother You. And Amy Goodman said, you're an anti-capitalist musician. And he interrupted her mid-sentence and said, no, I'm a communist. The refrain, the hook of the song, We Got the Guillotine, You Better Run, is kind of a nod to your original choice, but a little bit more explicit in its meaning.
And we chose to use the refrain, We Got the Guillotine, as our motif. So you'll hear it monthly. You'll hear it every time we come back to this segment of the program, Another World is Possible. The second choice that appealed to me and that I almost went with was by Calle 13, or just having got off the phone from my son, who's quarantined down in remote regions of Colombia, where they pronounce this Calle 13. The song was Pal Norte. How about it? What's the appeal there?
Well, that song is just a song about hope, about understanding what is sometimes necessary. And, I believe when migrants and immigrants, I'm an immigrant myself, when we move from Latin America to the United States, it's not anything that it's something done out of necessity, but while still retaining some sense of hope. And I think that song reflects dignity more than anything.
An aspiration, yeah. Yeah, looking forward to some kind of a future that is a whole lot better than what we're subject to today. That was the appeal for me of that song as well. Candy, thank you very much. Hope to hear much more from you in future broadcasts.
Thanks so much, Mom.